You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 400. I'm going to start over. No, leave that in, Adam. Leave that in. I blew my joke intro. I was supposed to say 500, but I blew it. It's not episode 500 yet. It's going to be episode 500 in 3 weeks. This is episode 499.69. Let's rock.
All.
No, all.
And we're back. Punk News Podcast. We're 499.69. I know a lot of people were asking for the 500. 500 is in the work. Hallie Bull and I were hatching crazy plans earlier this week. And it's going to be cool, people. It'll be real cool. Hallie Bullitt, are you ready for Punk News Podcast 500, which will surely be in 3 weeks? And are you ready for our special, our very special episode today?
I'm ready for both. I'm glad I have a little time before 500, 3 weeks, as you say. Because, yeah, I think it'll be cool. I want to, like, sort of get my thoughts together about it.
Well, there you go. Hallie Bullitt being reasonable, getting her thoughts together. And in contrast, someone that just spouts off random things off the top of head like myself, which actually I think that is not true. I think things that Adam said are actually most considered, both to his credit and to his detriment. Adam White, agree or disagree? When you speak on the Punk News Podcast, things you say are thoughtfully considered and not off the top random musing.
You know that episode of Breaking Bad where there's like no dialogue, there's just a fly that's in the meth lab
Yes.
and it's just driving them crazy? Apparently that is an episode that is divisive. Like some people really hate it for whatever reason. That's happening right now in my office with me and you by extension, because, you're a part of this. So, what?
What's your opinion of the Seinfeld episode? We're in they're in the Chinese restaurant the entire time. And I think it might be like one camera angle. I forget.
I feel like that was one of the first couple Seinfeld episodes that I ever saw. So in my mind, it's very like ingrained as being like that's the way that show operates. I feel like it was either that one or the one where they're just like wandering around the parking garage for the whole episode trying to find a car was one of the first ones that I'd ever seen. So I just internalized that as like that's the kind of pointless nonsense that happens on that show. So I'm all for stuff like that. But yeah, anyways, whatever you were saying, I'm not paying attention because there's a fly in my office and it's buzzing around and it is at the very least going to distract me to the point where I'm totally useless on this show.
How's that different than usual? Hallie Bullitt, what's your opinion of shows and or movies where the entire thing is like one scene? A movie that did that was the Quentin Tarantino film about cowboys in Alaska or whatever it was. What the hell was that called? The Hateful Eight. Hateful Eight. What's your opinion of those?
That's like the only Tarantino one that I haven't seen because everyone told me they didn't know if I would like it. But generally, I'm into that. Generally, I'm totally into that. And I love that episode of Breaking Bad.
Well, that's a good news. That's good news because, listener, you are in for a single in-camera REM episode today, because on today's episode, we are going to do what we did about, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago or so, where we're just going to talk about three albums, one album each, and we're going to discuss it between ourselves. And we're going to talk about why we think this album is interesting or not interesting or weird or cool. Unlike the last episode we did, which was about 6 months ago, where I did Guar, Adam did Simply Softer, and Tom did Sloppy Seconds. Those were all pretty well-known, pretty famous, highly regarded albums, at least in certain circles. Today, we're going to talk about three relatively obscure, or if not obscure, well, two obscures, and one album that is actually wildly well-known, but almost no one has actually listened to it, almost paradoxically, if you will. And that's going to be today's episode. Before we do that, let's hit the mail. You can always use that podcast@punknews.org, and we love getting your mail. And this is I lost it again. This is from, I lost it. My bad. I'm going to pull up the podcast email right now. I don't know how I lost it, but here's some mail from podcast@punknews.org. And you can always reach us there. We love getting your mail. And this is from Nathaniel. Nathaniel's written in before. And actually, Nathaniel influenced my pick for this week, but actually backwardsly, if you will. Nathaniel says, hello, podcast. I think that the KRS-One Kid Capri Block Party mixtape is the best release so far this year. I checked it out after you talked about it on the show and have been listening to it probably a dozen times since. I have also listened to KRS-One's first three albums on repeat. John, please never give in to the haters who only want to hear about punk rock in its most narrowly defined form, because I often enjoy your recommendations from other genres. I already wrote in once this year about a metal rabbit hole you sent me down after discussing Guar. I'm very curious what you think of the track Just to Prove a Point off of KRS-One's I Got Next album. It really comes out of left field on the album, but I think I like the song. And this is from the Lone Punker, Nathaniel. Nathaniel, thank you for writing. And actually, I was going to talk about a KRS-One album this week, but then I heard Adam's album, and I thought, well, no, my second pick is actually more in line with that. And also, I did talk about KRS-One's Return to the Boom Bap album in some detail about 3 years ago when I made Adam and Ricky listen to 5 hip-hop albums in a row. As to my opinion on Just to Point off KRS-One's I Got Next album, in case the listeners don't know, KRS-One is, well, he basically is Boogie Down Productions along with Kenny Parker and Scott LaRock. And then he became solo, but it's exactly the same thing. KRS-One, his third album is called I Got Next. I think it's his second best album after Return of the Boom Bap. I Got Next a little bit more frantic and wild than Boom Bap. And the first half is exceptional. The second half is very, very good. The last track, or the last real track, called Just to Prove a Point, and it's KRS-One kind of rapping over drone metal, which is usually a recipe for disaster. But in that circumstance, because it's the last track on the album, because it's heavy and isn't new metal-y, it's kind of just like drone metal, I think it's pretty cool and interesting. If it was anywhere else except for the last track on the album, I think it would be bad, but because it's there, I think it's cool and interesting. And that's my opinion on that. And you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We're not going to waste a whole lot of time because I am going to play the first track off my album pick. And my album pick is Flock of Seagulls' first album from 1982. And the song that I'm going to play is Modern Love is Automatic. And we are back, and that was Flock of Seagulls doing Modern Love is Automatic. And let me tell you people about Flock of Seagulls. People might think that Flock of Seagulls is like this cheesy 80s band with, you know, 80s hair and, you know, the wedding singer kind of thing. And that was my opinion of Flock of Seagulls as well. But when I lived out in California, I would flip the dollar bin in Streetlight Records, and anything that I had heard of or looked cool, I would pick up for a dollar. And Flock of Seagulls was there for a dollar, because at the time it was strictly a dollar record album. And I didn't even actually like the song. Listeners are probably familiar with the song I Ran off the Flock of Seagulls album. And they probably think, like I said, they probably think of Flock of Seagulls as like this cheesy 80s band or whatever. And so did I. But I just picked up because it was a dollar and I was pretty sure it was going to be bad. Little did I know that the Flock of Seagulls, the first album, actually, I mean, it is from the 80s. But when we think of 80s, you know, we think of, you know, what do you call it? Dead or Alive used to be right around like a record. Ooh, they think of like Rat and Great White and Quiet Riot and all that kind of stuff. I would argue that Flock of Seagulls' first album is almost more like post-punk or like space rock. It's, I mean, it is synth rock, if you will, but it's kind of its own thing. It sounds very futuristic. It even sounds futuristic today because it has such a clean sound. What I think is surprising about a lot of people is how dark it sounds. I mean, it's not like as dark as like, you know, Sleep or as like, you know, Black Sabbath Volume 4. But it does have a certain cosmic heaviness about it and kind of futuristic dystopian feel to it. And in fact, the entire album is about being paranoid and also getting abducted by aliens, which is kind of cool. A lot of people think I Ran is a love song, but if you actually read the lyrics, it's about trying to run away from a UFO that's trying to abduct you. And the next song, of course, is the classic space age love song. So I got this out of the dollar bin, and I put this album on, and I couldn't believe how good it was. It is not nearly as corny as cheesy as I thought it was. It's almost like a Gary Numan song, a little bit slicker, a little bit more energetic, but also more poppy. I think a couple of the tracks, songs like Messages, are actually like goth song. And I think songs like Standing in the Doorway have an amazing intro and then go into an almost punk or just like a very aggressive tone. And I think Flock of Seagulls suffered, if you will, from having a mega hit. And that is, they had a mega hit, and then they were kind of portrayed as like these 80s glam boys with, not that there's anything wrong with that necessarily, but with funny haircuts. And so people thought they were one-hit wonders and that they only had one good song. But it's almost as if that song was a detriment to them, because even though it was a huge hit, that's all they're known for. That's all anyone thinks of them, when really the entire album is freaking great. And also, you know, their, you know, lead singer, Mike Score, he's the guy with like the funny haircut, if you will. And that became synonymous with the band. And that's one of the things, I would argue that's one of the things that made the band famous, because he had this freaky haircut, which was actually based off Sue Catwoman haircut, but also David Bowie. And the rumor is he developed it because he actually was a barber, and he accidentally left like a hot curling iron on his head, so it like messed up his hair. And that's why he came up with the haircut. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's almost as the band was too popular off like one track, and it kind of cursed them forever. And that's all people saw of them. So there was no room for growth, just because all people wanted from them was that one song. But also, if they did anything else from that one song, people didn't want to hear it. And then people also got bored of that one song and moved on. So they were very much, I guess, benefited from the first true boom of the commercial music industry, if you will. But they also suffered from it because they couldn't ever really grow out from it. I saw Flock of Seagulls twice. The first time I saw them was at, it was like this tour called Hits of the 80s. And I don't want to diss on it, but it was very much a retro affair, in that it was Animotion, it was Flock of Seagulls, it was When in Rome, UK. It was a couple other like really like groups that like would be on the Wedding Singer soundtrack or something like that. And all the other bands, and Annabella Bow Wow Wow was there. Aside from Annabella, all the other bands, they really like hammed it up. They're like, who remembers the 80s? The 80s were great, you know? So I love the 80s. And it was like, yeah, I love the 80s. And, you know, everyone's got on the headband and the box, and like guys have on like the big puffy jackets. And everyone's like, yeah, the 80s was so great. And listen, I'm not dissing on it, but like the band say, we are here to kind of remember the 80s and convey a cartoony version of the 80s. And the audience came to enjoy a cartoony version of the 80s. You can't blame any of the bands. Everyone's just having fun, and the bands are trying to make a buck. Can't blame anybody for that. block of sequels comes out, and they were not doing that at all, which I – that's when I went from being a big fan to, like, an ultra fan. Like, they were wearing all black. They had – well, block of sequels is really just Mike's score now. But the band was wearing all black. They had all these super black sunglasses, and they just basically hammered through the first album. But where all the other bands were like, who remembers making out with your first girlfriend in 1983 in the back of your Chevette or something? You know, like, they didn't talk to the audience at all. And they just went song after song of the first. They basically only did the first album. And the songs were, like, really fast, really, like, heavy and energetic. And it was really massively interesting art, if you will. And actually, though, to their credit, the people dug it because the first album has, like, three or four hits. And so the people were into it. But, like, instead of really saying, yeah, we're from the 80s, let's have some fun, which I don't really blame, they're like, no, we're artists, we make good music, and we're going to play great music. And that's what they did. And Flock of Seagulls is awesome. They're just a great band. And the point being is, and this is the music industry is dead, or it's most – well, actually, it's not dead. It's actually operating – as we've seen with Live Nation, it's operating behind the scenes in a more nefarious position than ever. However, the music industry circuit, say, 1978 to 2010, if you will, it really did have a massive influence on how things were received. And if you look at a lot of these one-hit wonder bands, Flock of Seagulls, Modern English, Bow Wow Wow, you think, oh, they have one – they're completely a studio construct and they've got one song and the rest is garbage. But then when you dig into it, you're like, no, actually, this is like a real band, and – They willfully, if you will, engaged in the massive music industry at the time, and that kind of allowed people to focus on one aspect of the band, and that's all they were. But underneath that all, just because a band was, you know, it was involved in the music industry, doesn't mean they're bad. And actually, a lot of those bands are actually really, really good. And I think this Flock of Seagulls album is great. The subsequent ones are okay. Not as great, but this first album I thought is absolutely fantastic. Halle Radham, did you dig Flock of Seagulls, or were you like, this is 80s garbage?
Who wants this first?
Go, Adam.
Go. No. So, no, I mean, I dug this, and I benefit greatly from not having the immediate... Like the immediate imagery in my head of the band, where I think that a lot of people who are a little bit older than me that would have been more aware of what the media perception of a band like Flock of Seagulls was at the time may have a harder time being convinced that there's something more here than the hair, right? Because that was such like a weird cultural phenomenon, and it made that band kind of like emblematic of a lot of the goofiness that we attribute back to the new wave era, like wrongfully, but perhaps when you like look at their recorded output. I mean, John, you've sent me down rabbit holes of reconsidering some of these 80s bands that I would have just like written off before. And I think like the last one that you and I had really gone over would have been like Men at Work.
Oh, I should have mentioned them. Oh, Men at Work.
Right, because I think that like you, was it Cargo that was their second album that was actually kind of like right. kind of like dark and cool and then had like none of the goofiness or aspects of you know the one single that everyone can just kind of like roll their eyes as soon as it starts playing back in their head, right? Where I think that like were you to go and to plunk some random band that you've never seen on a stage right now, and they were to step out and they were to play, you know, Men at Work's Cargo, or they were to play the first Flock of Seagulls record, you and by you I guess I mean me, I'd be into it. I'd be like, hey, this. I mean, I get that there's like a new wavy throwback thing happening here, but whatever. Like, this band is cool and they're doing, you know, interesting things, and I can definitely appreciate that listening to this. Now, the flip side of the compliment is that I have been just mainlining that first Devo record for the past year and a half. It is just like jumped way up my my pantheon of classic records into my top five or whatever. Like, it is now like something I adore and pay a ton of attention to and listen to all the time. And I can definitely hear how a band like Flock of Seagulls hits on a lot of those same notes and aspects, but there isn't the weirdness and the danger that Devo would have injected at that first record in particular. So I can definitely see how, you know, maybe this is lacking like a little bit of teeth at times, at least given that comparison. But, you know, that's a minor criticism. I'm generally into this, and I feel that there is something about Flock of Seagulls that their one hit wonders have not haunted me like the songs of so many of their contemporary. Like there were certain 80s bands that, and this might just be a regional thing, that you can't escape from their stuff. Either it's a song that just became recontextualized in the 90s and just reused for everything, and, you know, in every commercial, in every movie, and there's that, or there's like regional stuff. Like there's 80s bands that get replayed all the time up here strictly because they were Canadian, and I can't fucking listen to any of them because it makes me want to die. And when you see those bands play, and they always get trotted out to play all of these nostalgia events, they always seem like they have aged in the way that you did not describe. Like, they have aged in the worst way, where the band is sort of just like flabby and old and trying to relive, you know, some glory day for all of the old ants in the audience or something like that. Like,
is that a bad thing though, Adam, or is that depressed? Like, I'll draw an analogy. Once when I was feeling down a number of years ago, I was feeling down, I went to an acoustic ska show on like a Tuesday night, and it was a lot of like, it was like, I'm not even gonna say who it was like four like front men from like 90s ska bands. And it was the most depressing thing I've ever seen. There was like 25 people there. The guy's doing like acoustic ska. I was bummed out even walking in the door. And it's like, oh, like, they're like, and here's another song about, you know, my girlfriend from ninth grade. And it's like, oh my God, heart, you know what I mean? But on the other hand, if people go, let's just have some fun and think about, you know, the old times, which were fun too. In the abstract, it isn't.
But when confronted with it, I revulse. Like, it does not. So the three that seem to haunt me up here, and none of these bands I think ever had to the level of cool, let's say, of a band like Flock of Seagulls did. But like the two that haunt me up here because of the Canadian thing is a band called Loverboy, which everybody's working for the weekend. That was their one hit wonder.
Take me home tonight.
They're always trotted out to play. You know, if you have like a fucking, you know,
Take Me Home Tonight is Eddie Money.
If
you were to open like a Lowe's up here, you know, they'd trot out Loverboy to play the opening, or that feels like
they're always
and the other one is Honeymoon Suite, which is a band that was from Niagara Falls, so that has like a special thing for me. But, you know, they'll bring out the guy from Honeymoon Suite to sing New Girl now whenever they can. And the one that is not necessarily Canada specific, at least I don't think so, that is just a constant ghost in my life is fucking Styx. And
they're Canadian Styx?
No, they're not, but they're always here. So they're like, so Niagara Falls has one of the big New Year's Eve things traditionally up here, like, well, it's like one of the big televised New Year's Eve parties, just like they do like the Times Square one that they always broadcast. So there's always some Canadian news stations broadcasting whatever's happening at Niagara Falls, because there's a green space right in front of the water where you can go and set up a big band shell, and they do, but then they never get anyone interesting to play it, and then they increasingly get less interesting people to play it as the TV sponsorships have kind of dried up over the years. So increasingly, you could just like roll a dice, and if it lands on an even number, you know you've got like Dennis DeYoung from Styx to come out there, and he is not. You don't want to see someone play like Come Sail Away year on year as they increasingly become older and more dead. It's not what you want, and I can't escape it. So there is. I'm glad to hear that a band like Flock of Seagulls has actually gone and conducted themselves with some dignity in their post-career era, because the rest of that stuff is just like, it always just seems so lame. Like I try to like take myself out of like having like a snobby opinion about stuff sometimes and be like, I should just let people enjoy stuff. But there's something about like those three artists in particular that when it's on, I'm just like, ugh, like I can't do it. So I'm glad that Flock hasn't, and I'm glad that their music hasn't haunted me. I guess I understand that like Iran was a theme song to one of the Grand Theft Auto games or something like that. So if you're a gamer person, you may have a different contemporary Flock of Seagulls relationship than I do. But I don't game, bro. So I don't know.
I was so delighted to listen to this whole album, because I was alive when this album came out, but I wasn't old enough to be like buying my own record. Otherwise, I might have bought this one. I loved that single when it came out. I mean, everyone, if you were alive on planet Earth, you like loved Iran when it came out. But yeah, I totally hear what you're saying, John. It was like a more serious album than I was really expecting. Although, you know, like some of it's funny. Come on, can we be honest? It's like all the like arpeggio guitar parts and all the like singing about aliens. Like some of it's like kind of hilarious. It's not like, I can't take the whole thing like super seriously. But yeah, it was like way better than I thought it would be. And I know, Space Age Love Song was not as big a hit as it should have been. That song's amazing. And I feel like I know it more. Like, I feel like I know it more from one of those, like, Before You Were Punk albums. Didn't someone cover it for that?
Maybe.
Yeah. Like, someone covered Space Age Love Song on one of those albums. I feel like I know it better from that than from when this album would have come out. And there was, like, one other, like, pop hit. Like, why was this song not a hit? What song am I talking about, John? It was like, what was it? Telecommunications.
I mean,
come on, why was this song not all over the radio? It's like so good. Some of the more like minor chordy, like droney stuff, like Let's Sing About Aliens, it wasn't like as much for me, but like still just I was really happy to listen to this whole album from beginning to end. It does make me a little, I know I should like love it and respect it that they got up at that show you went to and that they were just like super serious about their shit. But like somehow it makes me almost like sadder. Cause it it like echoes this idea that like they really just wanted to be like something more. It's like some, like those other bands have just embraced the fact they're like, yeah, like fuck yeah, like I had a hit song, like I made my money, let's like talk about Miss Pac-Man, let's like have nostalgia for that, you know, like the fact that they got up there and they like the still of like I just want to be like a real band, there's like something about that that like really kind of breaks my heart. You know, this is a great record. I'm really glad I listened to it.
I think you were thinking, by the way, of there was a cover of shit, what song were we talking about? Space Age
Iran?
No.
Iran Space Age Love Song?
Space Age Love Song on the Before You Were Punk 2 album, and it was No Motive that covered it. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a great cover too. Great cover. No Motive. That's a band I haven't thought about in like decades. I think that was a good band. That was like an okay band. Maybe I got to revisit No Motive now.
I actually saw Flock of Seagulls a second time after at the 80s Fest. And it was another kind of weird show. And in a way, it's like cool they're still doing their thing, but I can understand how it was York, Pennsylvania? I think was it York? It was York, Pennsylvania. Was it York? I think it was York. Or was it Lancaster? It was York. I'm almost sure it was York. York, Pennsylvania, the Chamber of Commerce, like, had a free Flock of Seagulls show to help invigorate the local economy. And I'm not exactly sure how that works. And it was totally free. And I went and saw them. And actually, like a lot of people were there. But I think just because it was like a lot of families were there. And I'm not dissing on family, but like people were like, let's go see Flock of Seagulls after we go to Wendy's or something like that, you know? And so there they did a more career-focused set that had their first, second, third, and fourth albums. And I will say, part of it is the guys, and this is like the ninth song from our third album. I really love this song. It's like, this is one of my favorite songs, and it's just not the best. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I get what you're saying, Howie, in that like, you can look at it two ways. You can say it's sad that it never really broke for him. Well, actually, it did break. He made tons of money, hypothetically. But he always was shackled with this 80s one-hit wonder thing, despite the fact that he sees himself as a real, real artist. But on the other hand, you know, at least he didn't curl up and say, that's it. It's over. You know, I'm just going to go, you know, I don't know, do whatever. Like he didn't seem at both the 80s gig and at the York Chamber of Commerce show, he seemed to be enjoying himself and really being into it. Now that like some artists are on such the road circuit that it seems like they're up there having a blast, but it's a total act and they're completely miserable. You know, mm-hmm. At my last law firm for our winter and summer party, we would bring in some bands, and on stage they'd be like, yeah, you know, we love playing the blank 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 PC law firm, you know, winter festival, and but then you like see them afterwards or before. Actually, I'll tell a real funny story. I can tell the story. So we had Bo Bice. You guys remember Bo Bice?
No.
Bo Bice was one of the big American idols, like at the very beginning. Like he was like the number two guy, mm-hmm. and he was playing our law firm's winter. I think it was the winter party, and the owner of the firm, my boss's boss, so my boss. He goes, hey, Bo, how you doing? And he goes, and Bo Bice goes, living the dream. and then, like, on stage, he's like, everybody clap your hands. It was, like, such an act. So I don't really know about the Flock of Seagulls guy, but it seemed like he was having fun. I hope he is.
That makes me feel better.
Last thing we'll say about the Flock of Seagulls guy, Mike Score, famous for his haircut. Adam and Hallie, what do you think his haircut is now in 2020?
My guess is he has just like regular guy haircut.
Adam, what do you think?
The short crop.
The gods are cruel. Ironically, totally bald. Bald.
Oh.
But in a way, that, like he might be happy about that because that way he doesn't have to do the haircut because he can't. So no one can blame him for it. You know what I mean?
No one can like put that in his contract that he can only play these like nostalgia shows if he has the haircut.
And also, like when you're young, and I'm not dissing on the guy because I'm a huge fan. But when you're young and skinny, like stupid haircuts can look awesome. But when you're middle aged and not young and skinny, like stupid haircuts look stupid. You know what I mean? So, anyway, I'm gonna play the two songs, and then we're gonna come back with some picks by Hallie. I'm going to play Messages, which I would urge you to listen to in isolation, in that forget about the context of the band. To me, it sounds like a goth track. And then we're going to play my favorite Flock of Seagulls song, which starts with like a post-punk rumble. And actually, which on multiple punk news show events, I have slipped in between the band and not told the audience it was Flock of Seagulls, obviously. And the audience was grooving. I'm going to play Dancing in the Doorway by Flock of Seagulls, 1982. Jive Record or Arista in U.S. Flock of Seagulls.
I'm holding the time without the clock.
And we're back. Hallie Bullet, you got some tunes to play. You got a band to talk about. What are we talking about?
I do. Okay, so this is Carrie Nations. This is a band from Athens, Georgia that were active in like the like early to like mid 2000s. And this is off their full length Be Still, which came out in 2002. And I would just want to play like the opening track that goes right into the second track. So this is Hell to Pay, which goes straight into Farming Communities.
Hello, my future girlfriend. I am 11 years old in the 6th grade in New Mexico. This is what I sound like.
You've got hell to pay.
I love this album. I like loved it the first time I heard it. I think I heard it because someone put Hell to Pay, that first song that I played, they put that on a mixtape for me. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I got this album. I love the entire thing beginning to end. And I still love it. It like still really speaks to me. It's like one of the few albums from that era that I can just still put on anytime and be like really thrilled that I'm listening to it again. And I guess like I was really curious, the specific reason I wanted to pick this album to talk about with you guys is because I really do want to know if it's good or not. Because, you know, sometimes I think like, you know, like my husband and I sometimes, you know, we have a huge overlap of music that we loved when we were younger, like a really as good an overlap as you can hope for in like your life partner. You know, there's like so much like obscure like old Weston songs or like stuff that we both know like every single word to. And it's like pretty, it's pretty awesome. But every now and then, like one of us will try to play an album for the other one that like, you know, he'll try to play something for me that I just like didn't, it was, it, I just missed it. It wasn't something I was listening to like back in the day. And like now it's just like, it's too late. I can't get into it. Like I would probably have loved it if I had heard it at the time, but like, so I don't know. I have this like phrase for some of those albums, like those albums that I try to play for my husband. I'm like, remember this one? And he's like, not only do I not remember it, but like, I don't think it's very good. And I'm like, no, you had to be there. So, like, I understand that there are albums like that, just the sort of like, you had to be there albums. And, I'm just like really curious to know, what you guys thought of this.
Well,
like,
if you'd known it
at the time. Oh, you know what? When I was listening to it again, like in preparation for this episode, he liked it. He actually asked, he was like, oh, who is this? And our son was rocking out to it, and he's only one. So it speaks to the youth of today, if I want to point out. yeah, I'm just curious just to know, you know, and I'll love it no matter what. So you can totally tell me, like, I don't think this is very good.
what year did this come out again?
2002. And I probably didn't hear it until 2000, maybe 3 or 4.
There was a while there where we had a lot of bands that were doing what I guess you'd call now folk punk, but we're doing it not so much in an acoustic guitar-y kind of way, but doing it in that they were playing their songs not with everything entirely amped up, and more of like this like scrappy, like indie rock influenced sense of things. And there's a lot of bands from that era that I really like, but I'm pretty sure it exists in that same sort of realm that are sort of like time and place kind of bands.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they would sit with anyone, if for no other reason than aspects of that sound sort of were taken and then completely beat into the ground by like a lot of like the bands that like showed up in Against Me's Wake, and a lot of the bands that, you know, when the Planet X stuff started getting very hip and all, like all of that. Right. So I'm never sure where, how any of that stuff would sound to anyone. And Carrie Nations to me sounds like a band from that.
Well, this came out on Planet X.
Oh, okay. Right. So, yeah. So like it sounds like one of those bands that's from that era, but not, and to their credit, not from the point where it became annoying for me. So, like, I'll name names for bands I don't like because I don't care if anyone hears this, I guess. But so, like a band that I remember that everyone was incredibly into for a while was, like, say, like Defiance Ohio, and that was a band that they just had so many of the hallmarks of that post Against Me, like Planet X is becoming hip, folk punky sound, everyone's, you know, kind of shouting over acoustic guitars and like all this kind of stuff that was playing into that. That I remember that when everyone was into that, I heard that record and I was just like, I'm like, I can't do it because the band doesn't sound like the band. The band sounds like the sound. It sounds like other bands.
It sounds like the scene.
Yeah, like it sounds like if you had to, no, I mean, to their credit, that's what they were shooting for. They were trying to play that sound. So I'm, you know, maybe that's a backhanded compliment, is that they were exemplary of that sound. But there was just something about it for me that didn't, it just didn't work. I couldn't grab onto it. Carrie Nations, they have a lot of those aspects that are in it, but they don't sound like they're a reflection of it. They sound like that maybe they were a band that was doing it at the time.
And like it's from the gut, right?
Yeah. And I can, and I'm down with that. I can't say that there was necessarily anything like sitting here at like 10:19 PM that I can pull out of my hat as being like a particular hook or anything like that, but I've only listened to it a few times, so it's not, I haven't internalized a lot of it, but it didn't raise up any of those red flags. I think a lot of that, like, slightly afterwards Pulse Punky stuff did. Although now I feel very good that you said it was on Planet X, because I was like, oh, look, I put two things together.
I know, dead on.
John, what's your read? Because you were never into, I don't feel like you were into this particular style at all. Like, I feel like I was kind of, but maybe I got burned out of it.
Well, generally, I can't stand Planet X style band. To me, a lot of those bands come off as whiny or pointless or just no danger. You know, that's what it is. Is a lot of those Planet X bands, to me, they're overly self-righteous, and to me, there's no danger. And honestly, maybe there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, punk rock has many different definitions. And I think you can roughly split it into the danger zone definition, and that punk rock is danger, weirdness, scariness. That's punk rock. Or punk is a set of rules that we ascribe to because we feel these are the moral and just right ways to be. And that's punk rock. And those two things are really in conflict with each other. And I always like the danger stuff, not the, punk rock is a set of, and I don't even mean that dismissively, a set of rules or a set of virtues, if you will. Maybe not rule, but a set of virtue. And so a lot of that stuff to me just comes across as, I don't really care about your problem. You know, Nick Blinko is singing about, the depression and Cthulhu, like, pulling him into a black abyss, and he'd rather not even be dead, just not exist at all. And you're talking about how your dad doesn't like you or how your girlfriend and you are growing apart. I just don't care. That's my general harsh take on Planet X style stuff. And so, Harry Nations, to a degree, but also, no matter what genre there is, you pick any genre, there is good music in that genre, except for white power. maybe instrumental white power music, you could say, is okay. But any genre has killer records in it. Disco has killer records in it. Country Western, well, of course, Country Western does. But probably even like 80s Country Western, there's probably some really good 80s Country Western. I'm trying to think of other 90s pop. I actually just got the President of the United States of America, the first album. I never listened to it ever. It's a great record. So any genre has great music in it. With the Carrie Nations, I thought this record was very, very good, and I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed it because the songs are very quick. The songs are like a minute and a half. They just snap through. It's got a certain rag.
It's just like 13 songs in 28 minutes.
That's what I'm talking about. I don't know if I would characterize it as folk funk. I would say it's somewhat shambolic, as folk funk tends to be. But to me, this is more just funk that's done ramshackle-wise, perhaps, as a college punk band might sound, and also I feel as though this band, although this band is a very humanistic type band in that these are problems we're dealing with right now, as opposed to Nick Blinko, who's like, I can't deal with the cosmic horror of existence, or Black Flag, who's like, the cops just threw me against the wall, let's go fight some cops, that's not this band. But that being said, this band, while talking about, I guess, relatively normal problems and fun stuff in such a shambolic, rapid, and somewhat funny manner, I felt this band does the Planet X style thing very well and more tastefully than most bands. And I think this record is fast and fun and enjoyable, and I dug it.
I saw someone on Reddit refer to it as, because part of the problem is that, so Planet X isn't a thing anymore because, Chris, who ran Planet X, during the Me Too, like very beginnings of the Me Too stuff, people came out and he said he had done some horrible stuff. And so, AJJ, Kimya Dawson, like all these bands kind of bailed from the label. And then he ended up releasing a statement and said he just wasn't, that the label was like, he'd already, I think, ended the label, but I think he was saying that he was basically going to make it so he no longer made any money off of the things that came out on the label. I think that's part of maybe, I'm not sure, but I feel like maybe that's part of why this album is super hard to find. You can't even find it streaming anywhere, you know, like it's not, I had to send it to you guys, right? Like, yeah. like on my Google Drive, because you can't, this album is nowhere. So I don't know. I thought that was like, kind of like sad and interesting too, you know, like that, you know, whether you were into that scene or not, it does sort of seem like that because of what happened, you know, unfairly. He shouldn't, you know, be maybe making music off of a label that apparently he used like his position in that label to maybe do some, you know, shitty behavior. But like, you know, for the bands that put out the music on that label, like what's that like, you know, it made me wonder, like what's that like for them, you know, you like wrote an album and like it's not even like, I don't know, like no one can find it anywhere, I've got to send it to you on Google Drive, you know.
Why don't they just put it out, you know?
I'm not sure. It's like they had the other album that they put out later is on Bandcamp and that one's not. So it could be for other reasons, but it sort of seemed to me like it might be that. Listen, I'll say this. I went to, in 2004, I drove out with some friends to the Planet X Fest in Bloomington. And I didn't really know that scene. I didn't really know those bands. It was just like, my friends were going and it was like a thing to do. And I think I feel kind of similarly to what you guys do. Like I like some of that stuff. Well, maybe I like that stuff more than it sounds like you guys did, but I wasn't like super into that scene, but man, I'll tell you guys, this festival was life-changing. It was completely amazing. You know, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking up Planet X because I'm not talking up Chris. What I'm talking up is a scene that built up around what he was doing and a lot of kids for whom that scene meant a lot to. And it was really cool to just, 2004 was kind of when that stuff was just getting really like fun and exciting for the people in that scene. And to kind of come in from New York here, I'm like, I have a band that's like, you know, for like a pop punk band doing like relatively well in New York. And so I think I sort of rolled into Bloomington, not really knowing what to expect from the scene there, and then just had my mind blown. I left that weekend being like, I think the scene that they have going here and what they're doing might be just 1,000 times cooler than anything we're doing in New York. Also, just side tangent, is the first place that I saw hipsters wearing beards.
Ah!
They weren't doing beards in Brooklyn yet, but Bloomington was on the beard track, dude. And I was like, I haven't seen people wear beards like this since I was like a child. And it was like very disorienting. I didn't know what was going on. And then sure enough, like two years later, suddenly like everyone in New York City is like sporting a beard. I don't know, whatever. I feel like I can say this because I wasn't a part of it. It was a cool thing. It was a cool thing and a scene that like meant so much to people, and people were doing really creative stuff, whether you were into it or not, or whether it was your thing or not. It was a cool thing. And I'm glad I got to kind of be a fly on the wall and like kind of just see a piece of it.
Hallie, give me your perspective on this. The podcast is Tom Trauma and myself have been locked in a battle over this for about, I don't know, a year or so. Tom Trom is like, we'll be talking about something that's like, he's like, I guess hipsters like that. And I'm like, Tom, man, you need to let that drop, because like hipsters like don't even exist anymore. Like that culture has kind of phased out into other different cultures. Do you agree? And Tom's like, no, hipsters are still around. I see them all the time. I don't even really think that's like a thing anymore. You know, is it, what's your perspective?
I mean, it's like hipsters are still around. It's just not cool to call them hipsters anymore. It's like he's still calling, he's still like, oh, those cool cats over there or something. It's just like, it's the cool kids. There's always going to be cool kids. And then, yeah, I don't think called, but it was a very specific moment in time that we called them histers. And I think you're right. That time is gone.
Well, thank you for being my, Tom, take that. So, yeah, I mean, the Planet X thing really, well, I guess one of these, that was shocking. But like, the thing is that he was so vague about it. And it's like, well, like if you're guilty, then you're going to say, I'll go away forever. But if you're not guilty, you're going to say, I'm not guilty. And here's why. And he was just like on the fence. It was like super vague. And I don't know what he was trying to achieve with that.
Really? Because I reread his statement again, just sort of like thinking about this episode. And I thought he pretty much owned up to being guilty. He didn't really say what it was that he had done, but he really kind of, he did apologize for whatever it was. On 11, yeah. I think was, sort of this, I think that the music scene can kind of foster this sometimes, which is this kind of like Peter Pan syndrome, where it was like he was getting older and older and older and older, and the women that he was dating were staying the same age, and it was seeming creepy to people. But that's certainly not worth closing a record label down. So obviously, I guess there was some other stuff as well. That's really a shame.
Yeah.
But listen to this. Oh, so sorry. Go ahead, John.
Oh no! I brought up, but we're not going to relitigate that whole issue, so I shouldn't have really brought that up. But listen, it's a weird thing. Hallie, I'm sorry. Let's bring it back to the pause. This band is cool. I dug the CD.
Dude, but wait, listen. What I just want to, I just need to tell you this lineup of that I saw at this festival. It was like so great because it was like the people. It was like the Planet X bands that you would expect, but then it was the right Defiance Ohio played Adam. And while I would never listen to a Defiance Ohio album, probably, I really enjoyed seeing them live. It was great. And then like Sufi Nun Squad, which was like this weird band that had like puppets on stage, and like Max Levine Ensemble, which I'm still like a huge fan of. But Japanther played this shit. Toys the Kill played. I mean, this was like, this festival was completely amazing. This band, One Reason, played. And oh my God, listen, I'm not going to talk about their whole album, but if there's one like just obscure punk song that I think you should listen to, it's this One Reason song. Hold on. Okay. I'm going to keep talking while I look this up. But One Reason played this song of theirs that like everybody loves. And I tell you, 100 people poured on stage and sang along. I'd never heard this song before. I'm like watching from the balcony. Again, I'm just like, I'm not a part of the scene. I'm just kind of watching this whole festival play out as like, I'm like this, almost like I was like a journalist or something. I was just like an observer to this thing that I was like not a part of. And it was like so freaking cool. Oh, this band, this song is so good, you guys. It's like the chorus is like, this life is what you make it. Oh my gosh, the festival, hold on, I'm looking it up.
Well, how is looking up Sufi Nun Squad? I don't know a whole lot about them, but I've got like two of their records I got for like $1 somewhere. Sufi Nun Squad is freaking awesome.
It's an amazing band. Amazing, amazing band. Yes. Maybe it's just called This Life is What You Make It. Oh no, it's called The Black and the Red. Oh my God. So just whatever. I won't take up. If we do another one of these album episodes, I'm not going to talk about that album, but I do need everyone to go listen to that song. It's called The Black and the Red by One Reason. And like, I saw 100 people pile on stage and sing this song. And it was like, yeah, life changing. Very cool.
Well, there you have it. Hallie Bullitt, let's send them out on this segment with one or two, your pick by your band.
We'll do one. This song is called Girlfriend. And thank you for humoring me. I'm glad to have your reflections on this album. It still means a lot to me, and I hope the listeners are enjoying these few songs. So yeah, this is Carrie Nations with Girlfriend.
Youth in charge, disciplinary report. Pray safe landing in your own airport. Your girlfriend is suffering from a lack of attention. Cause your trial error, your effect. Your girlfriend is suffering from a lack of
Adam White, I was going to do KRS-One this week, as I discussed, but then I heard your band, so I said, no, I will do a Flock of Seagulls style, which I think is somewhat reminiscent of Adam White's band. Adam, agree or disagree?
Yeah, because there's definitely part of that sound kind of creeps into this. So I was walking around for a number of years, maybe still, I haven't gone and checked my closet, with a denim jacket that had a big 2-inch pin on it. And in the pin, it said, in like plain black font on a white pin, I like a lot of stuff, but I'm not into much. And this was the pin was a lyric from the Teenager song, Fun Forgot. And it didn't say the band's name or have any kind of logo or anything. It just said those words. And I just wear this stuff around on my cool denim rock and roll jacket. And anytime, but the pin was big enough that whenever I was like checking out at a grocery store or something like that, I would catch the clerk reading it or like trying to decipher what was on there. And what I really like about it is that it wasn't the name of a band. It wasn't like a cool statement of anything. If anything, it was like an anti-statement. It was a statement of just like this sleepwalking malaise of the culture overloaded. It was just saying that like yes, I'm aware of lots of music, but I'm just so fucking I like lots of stuff. Leave me alone, right? And just having that on there, I had an enormous amount of fun with, because everyone that read it was always trying to like, was, I think they were expecting to go look at that and then comment back to me about something, about a band or asking about anything. But they would just read this pin that would basically just like, it could have been just a pin that said pin. And they were just sort of left dumbfounded. And I took a great amount of joy out of that. And there's something about that, like, culture overloaded malaise that factors into this record that I want to talk about. And I think kind of underscores the whole theme of what the record is about. So the record I want to talk about is an album that came out in 2017 from a band from Toronto called Teen Anger. One word, Teen Anger. And the record is called Teenager. Now, that in and of itself is just the band fucking around. If you're a band called Teen Anger, then you basically go your entire career with someone misspelling your name. So at a certain point, they just decided to own it. And since everyone was always writing it wrong anyways, they thought, well, why don't we just do a self-titled record? But it's not actually a self-titled record. It's self-titled with the name that is the wrong name. So that's why this is what it is. So the record we're talking about is called Teenager. It's from a band called Teen Anger. So I want to just like put some background behind this, because this is a record that is very Toronto, and it is very Toronto in the sense of when it arose and who it arose from and sort of what it represents in what that city's become. So this is very much a post-punk record, a record that factors in a lot of the new wave sounds, and I'm sure that's where John's making his connection there. And it is very much a record of post-punk, kind of like summer bummer anthems. It's new wave, but it's like burnt out new wave. And Teen Anger kind of takes the post aspect of that label very, very literally in this album. So this record is their fifth. They came up in the Toronto grunge punk scene in the early 2000s. They started releasing cassettes in probably like 2007, 2008, something like that. And all of their earlier stuff was faster, scrappier, more easily definably garage punk in genre. And at the time, they were participating in a music scene that I want to say was more hopeful in a way. The Toronto of 2017 was, while it was certainly on the current path that it's on, it was, you know, it was less gentrified by a decade. The city had gone and declared itself like a quote-unquote music city. Like they were really trying to make themselves out to be, you know, some sort of like indie rock version of say like of Chicago or something like that. They really wanted to go and to like to make it sound like there was this grand musical heritage that was happening, that like a contemporary revolution was happening in the city. They were trying to brand themselves as cool, and this went like as far as like the mayor of Toronto was out there declaring that they were Music City. It was all talk, but it was talk based on a lot of hope, and it was a lot of hope that had kind of come off of the fact that a lot of the city's big indie rock bands had gone and blown up and had started to make waves in Pitchfork, when Pitchfork was kind of at the height of its power. This was during the era when, say, like Broken Social Scene was a really huge band. They had kind of elevated Toronto's, you know, they had kind of like pulled the entire music scene out of the local clubs and into sort of the more international spotlight. So there was a time there where Toronto was trying to be hip actively. They were really shooting for becoming a destination for live music that would kind of match up with the population, with the size of that city, with its international city status. They really wanted that to happen, but that didn't really work out that way. Most of the old venues that a lot of these bands would have played in that era closed. All that land was repurposed for condos. So many of like the cool little small businesses and shops and record stores and things like that, that people of that era loved, were priced out. The city is certainly not dead, but the scene that Teen Anger in particular would have grown up with, all those bands kind of went through the meat grinder. All those bands broke up or left or, you know, had basically reality come crashing into their face, and they had to move on. And that's where I feel like the post-punk of this record's post-punk is in a way very effective, where the band is still there. It's still the same four people. They're still out there making rock music, but everything feels different. Like the excitement of their youth has been replaced by this wry, weary coolness, and they've taken on this really tossed off, disaffected, like almost very like Gen X or early 90s attitude about things. And this is like super evident on the very last song in the record. The last song in the record is an acronym where it's NOBLO, which stands for Life of Bluer, North of Bluer, Life Onwards. What that means, so Bluer is one of the major Toronto streets. It kind of bisects the city from east to west. It is a little bit north of the downtown area, away from Lake Ontario. It's a street that, for a band of Teen Anger's era, would have very much marked like the line between where culture is happening and where, you know, the sprawl of the suburbs begin. But now, and you know, if you were south of Bloor, you were legitimately downtown. But if you were north, you know, who knows what level of suburbia you were gonna end up in. And for a Toronto band and to a Toronto audience at that time, to be north of Bloor is you have passed through some aperture at that point. Like you haven't gone through a portal to hell or anything like that. Like, it's not that dramatic, but you can't go back. You are now older. You've moved on from the coolness of your youth. And that kind of like bummer sense filters into so much of what's on this record. And a lot of the times it plays out in this kind of like bouncy new wave sense that's just kind of fun and maybe a little bit druggy. And you hear that on songs that are on here, like Works of My Body or Emoji Kush. But there's a lot of stuff on this song there's a lot of stuff on this record then that starts to trend into the weird as well. So I'm going to play one of those songs. I'll come back and kind of touch on a few of those. So just to kind of set the stage here, I'm going to play the song Fun Forgot. It is the song which inspired the pin that was on my jacket there. it is a song that I've decided is the unofficial song of the summer for 2020, because this is absolutely the summer that Fun forgot, because we can't fucking go anywhere or do anything. So I'll be back in a sec.
I stay indoors on all the nicest days. My beat up car can carry the weight. I'd like a lot of stuff, but I'm not into much. You're looking at the summer.
That was Fun Forgot. The interesting thing about this record to me is that there are a lot of eras where the band has starts to trend away from being just like a scrappy garage punk band, and they start to get stranger and they start to get weirder. And that might be the influence of the label that these guys run. The band's drummer, Steve Sadoli, and the guitar player, I believe, who's John Scholten. They run a label called Telephone Explosion up in Toronto, and they have for a number of years. It was actually the label that was on the very first Teen Anger tape that they put out. But that label has since gone and released like all sorts of stuff by bands that play like strange no wave music, like New Fries, or like crazy industrial stuff like Adonis Adonis, or really, really insane punk from bands like Soup Cans, and they've created like this reissue label based on that that releases all kinds of crazy ambient stuff and resurrects all these strange 80s I don't even know what you would call them, I don't know, whatever you call it, various 80s ambient music and stuff like that. They're finding and pulling all this stuff back in. So you start to see all this kind of like strangeness and synth based stuff kind of creep into this, to this rock band. And there's songs in here. Like there's a song called Witchwood Heights, which is referencing a Toronto neighborhood that, it takes this kind of like sinister guitar riff, but then it's matched up with this, to me, like, really nerve-wracking and off-putting like electronic clapping that kind of comes in at during the chorus in it. And then the weirdness sort of accumulates on this record on a song called what is it called, The Night Shift, which is basically an 80s goth ballad where they're crooning and it's just the oddest thing. And I don't know, there's something about this record that as I was sitting there listening to it, trying to come up with what songs and everything I wanted to play from it, I realized that like every song on this record I have somehow internalized over the past 2 or 3 years, and they've become incredibly burned into my brain. Whereas this was just a record that I liked when it came out, but I feel like it's a record that I've carried with me quite a bit since then. And I'm almost not even sure why, but I think there's an attitude thing here that either I'm very much in sync with or feels like where I'm going. I don't know. So John, the new wave influence on this thing is damn obvious. So is that what got you off your KRS-One trip?
Yes, Adam. It is. Listen, this band isn't like a Flock of Seagulls clone. And I'd be surprised if they were actually influenced by a Flock of Seagulls. But that futuristic, chic, clean sear, I thought, was there. What also I thought was interesting, Adam, is this record, what, 10 years old or something like that?
No, not that old. It's 3 or 4 years old, 2017, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, I was going to say this record sounds a lot like Ceremony, but I was going to say Ceremony sounds a lot like Band. But really, maybe this band sounds a lot like Ceremony. What I thought was, Ceremony was kind of the hardcore darlings, and then they went post-punk and kind of Joy Division-ish. And the L-shaped Band Ceremony album, I thought, was somewhat of a misstep. The latest one was better, but in a way, it's like I feel this band is kind of successfully merging punk and post-punk and new wave into something that's mature, if you will, but still energetic and has an edge to it. And I think that's what a lot of bands struggle with, actually, is, and these guys are actually pretty young, I think. Right, Adam?
Yeah, you know what? I feel that they project much older than they are, and I think that kind of comes from this, like, from the kind of overall burnt out weariness thing that they've got going right now. But
yeah, I don't know. I didn't get burnt out weariness from it. What I got was kind of like icy futuristic monster. You know what I mean? Or icy futuristic. Like,
No. But I think I should put that into perspective. I think like the icy futuristic thing is very much like it's a response from them. It is a, we were a more straight up kind of like rock and roll-y punk band for a while, but everything's fucking gone sideways, and now we're out here defining ourselves in this own way. I feel like that's very much a part of that. This band to me, one of the things that I find a lot of these. Like, I feel like I like a lot of bands that are like of this sort of like composition and that play music that has a similar feel to this. And I find all of them struggle with being a punk band by label, because they're, even in the moments where they're playing basically like straight up, like, I'm going to play fast and scrappy rock and roll on a, you know, in an independent way, in a way that, like, you could look at it and go, all right, I have no word to describe what they're doing, I guess, other than punk. You would never want to go and, like, you know, you would never go make a bill that has like Pennywise and then a band like this and then throw them together, because it just wouldn't work. And I'm never sure how to even describe bands like this, and honestly, I'm never even sure how to present bands like this to the punk news crew sometimes, because they don't wear the label comfortably, but they never wear kind of like any label comfortably. And then we just end up going like, well, you know, they're one of those indie rock style garage bands. And I'm like, yeah, but like, what does that mean? Like, indie rock, like what? Like, yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time putting any of those things together.
Well, what I would say, I definitely dug this release. What I would say is bands often struggle with becoming more mature, not just being, you know, 19-year-old kids screaming. But sometimes in that maturity, they lose an edge or a sense of danger. I'm overusing that, but they lose a certain thrill. And this is what my criticism of the Crikey album was. Not that I did dig that album, but it was safe. And I never felt as though they weren't doing, I never felt like they were taking any risks. By contrast, here, even if they're not actually taking risks, I do feel like there's an edge there. And I do feel like there's something exciting and fresh here, even though they might be in control of what they're doing. That's what I'm saying. Hallie Bullet, what'd you think of this album?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I like when people take like a lot of the post-punky stuff that I like, you know, like I heard Gang of Four in this and Talking Heads and Velvet Underground and like any, you know, I like all that stuff. So I'm going to like people that kind of try to put that stuff in a blender and make something new. Like I like Parquet Courts. I would put them maybe sort of in the same category as this band in terms of like bands that are trying to make some of that older like 70s stuff sound fresh. I thought it was cool. It was like I would say like the places where it got more like kraut rocky and more like a little, well, actually similar to what I felt about the Flock of Seagulls record, and I guess this is just me, is like I really like hooks. So when it gets like a little too like droney or a little too like robots talking or like I'm listening to binary code, it's like not always my thing. But like I think, Adam, you could probably even just like, because you know this record so well, you could probably even just guess the songs that I really like, you know, like the ones that you talked about at the beginning, like Emoji Kush or however you say, like that one I thought was like really like Gang of Four, like Talking Heads, like some of the best like arty and disjointed, but like also like kind of melodic and great. Yeah. So I would say like, I didn't like love all of this record, but I really liked a lot of it. Like Weird Money. Like there were a few of these tracks that I thought were like, just for me, for Hallie, that I was like, oh, I would listen to this again. This is awesome.
Yeah. I feel like genres have started to fail me when I'm writing about some of this stuff, because a band like this will come out and they'll almost like in the press release for it, just like purposefully just start making up genres that are bullshit because they know that trying to latch onto any given genre is gonna throw the wrong, either push them the wrong way or invite the wrong comparisons or things like that. Because you can't even I made the mistake of saying post-punk earlier on this even, right? But like, I feel that like when half the bands that cross my plate that say they're post-punk, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing something in like a angular, you know, Gang of Four, Devo-y kind of way. But what it really means is they kind of sound like New Order, right? And it's just like, well, those are two totally different sounds in a sense.
Yeah, no, and that's new wave,
right? And it's hard for me to, I don't know, like I'd hate to be the PR person for half these bands that play off of these 70s and 80s sounds, because because God, like, I don't know what you're supposed to, I don't know what you're supposed to do with them, because I find that a lot of the times the bands just end up sort of fighting the label, fighting the genre that the press release has given them. And like, there's a few that, like, there's a band I love called Tough Age, and they at some point got, like, you know, slapped with like, oh, we're a punk band as their label. But like, the sound of that band right now is like, they sound like The Clean. Like, they sound like a Flying Nun band out of New Zealand with the kind of guitar rock that they're playing at the moment. But every time there's a press release, there's always like, there has to be a line in there being like, don't call them a punk band, because da 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 da, right? And it's just like, it's just like the genres are just like becoming this impossible mishmash of trying to put out what it is. Now, like, when I first saw Teen Anger play, I saw them play like on the floor of a recording studio in Hamilton that was like a, like some secret show, you know, Ask a Punk kind of show, where a bunch of the bands were just like playing to the 25 people that were in the room or whatever it was. And that felt like the absolute ideal place to see these guys, because they were, you know, there was no artifice of there being a stage or there being of there being like a big rock show or anything like that was happening. Like, you know, like, they walked out like 4 feet from you and then played through these songs and like, and made it interesting by the way that they were sort of like, you know, like conducting themselves and moving their bodies and things like that. But there was no, you know, there was no fucking pit. There was no light show happening. And I've seen the band in other circumstances where they were playing on a big stage. And I'm like, oh, this is not that kind of place for this band to play. Like, I want to see this band just play, like, you know, in the corner of my basement. But let's grab a few more then, and we'll wrap this sucker up. So I'm going to play... What did I play earlier? Fun Forgot? Okay. So what I'll do is I'll play Emoji Kush, which is the song that we mentioned, and then Witchwood Heights, which is... I think maybe a more strange and kind of sinister version of this band. And then we'll come back. Here we go.
Not my time. ear to the ground, with a hand on the pulse, and you were privy to what's been going down. Not responsible for the damage you caused, but you're a coward in every sense of the word.
I'm not doing this, John. All right, we're back. I'm not hosting, so I don't know why I did that. Go ahead.
Technically, and that was your faux pas, but I was trying to walk through it.
No,
but that's cool, man. That's cool. Listen, the punk news audience has, when we did this kind of episode in the past, we got a lot of good email. I don't know if people like hearing these kinds of things or not, but probably do them again in the future because they're really fun to do. We're not going to do them all the time. We're on the track to 500. And one thing, let's talk about this briefly, and then we'll wrap this bad boy on up. The first time we did this, it was albums that people generally knew, or at least bands that people generally knew. This one, a bit more obscure. Hallie Bullet, which do you think is the more intellectually stimulating? And B, which do you think is what people want?
Oh, man. You know, I think it's, like, kind of random, because I think, honestly, like, whether people are into these episodes or not may just be like whether they just are responding to the song. You know what I mean? Are we talking about music that they care about or respond to? So I don't know if it matters. I'm not sure. I would be curious to know what you think. But I wonder if it matters so much whether it's like old stuff that people have heard of or maybe missed, or whether it's just completely like one of the albums I wanted to talk about this week, I couldn't talk about because I literally couldn't find my copy and you cannot find it anywhere. So I find value in that. I think that's an interesting thing to talk about, but I don't know. What do you think people like better?
Oh, I think you said you couldn't talk about it because it was banned in the USA or something like that.
No.
You know, I'd like to think that people like hearing about super obscure stuff that we talk about. But in reality, like, I would say, am I going to listen to a podcast that you talk about? Well, actually, that's not true either. So my one argument is, like, if I just turn into a random podcast and we're talking about some obscure album, I'm not going to listen. But if it's a podcast I listen to regularly and I respect the host's opinion, I'd actually prefer they play stuff I don't know, because if they – I go back and forth on Henry Rollins. Henry Rollins has a pretty good radio show where he plays stuff that I know and some stuff that I don't know. And sometimes when he plays stuff I don't know, I love it. So I'll say obscure. Adam White, what do you think?
You can go either way, but you can't mix it. So you can't. Right? Like you can't go. Like we couldn't sit down and have like one of us talk about, you know, the the fucking garage band that we saw play during our, you know, second year of college that no one's ever heard of again. And then have the next person talk about fucking, I don't know, Master of Puppets, right? Like, it's just, it's gotta be somehow in, you know, things that either not even thematically work, but like exist on some level tier that it makes sense to. Because interestingly, while we could not find, you know, Halley's record on the internet in a reasonable way, because it is out of print. Interestingly, in Canada, I could not find that first Flock of Seagulls record.
Oh, that's weird.
It is not a thing that exists in, I mean, I'm an Apple Music person. It does not exist in Apple Music's catalog. They have a bunch of like fucking greatest hits sets and stuff like that. But,
oh, wow.
Weird. I don't know.
Well, listen, listeners, let us know what you prefer. And we'll be back next week. And we're on the road to 500. Halley Bullet, any closing words? Anything you want the listeners to check out with regard to your album picked by the Italian Nations or anything else? Or any bad words? You know, we always give good word listeners, but any with anti-recommendations? Like, don't go to Bill's Boutique. He's a jerk. Something like that. What do you think of Halley Bullet?
I can't really think of any anti-recommendations, but I'm mad that I can't think of any because I think that's funnier. No, I don't know. I love this. I like listening to stuff that I missed or haven't thought about in a long time. So I don't know. I like this. I hope people are into it.
Adam White, any closing words? Any anti-recommendations?
An anti-recommendation would be, how do I phrase this so it is an anti? I don't know. I'm not going to do this. I'm tired. Wear a mask, you assholes. How about that?
And we will, you can reach the podcast at punknews.org. Wear a mask, and we'll see you next week.